KMXT in Kodiak. This is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, the new board president of the BBRSDA says their vision will remain the same. How warm summers affect young pollock in the Bering Sea, and rainy Kodiak apparently isn't rainy enough. Stay tuned for all that and more on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
The Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association has a new board president. Abe Williams, who was elected to the board just last spring, was selected as president in September. Williams skippers the fishing vessel Crimson Fury and is president of Nuna Resources. Nuna is a nonprofit that supports sustainable resource development in rural Alaska, including calling for what he says is due process for the proposed Pebble Mine project. The BBRSDA has long opposed the development of large-scale mining in the Bristol Bay watershed. Williams says the vision for BBRSDA will remain focused on marketing and quality, just as Gibbons had said it would in June.
No, I think the organization, has a pretty solid strategic plan or vision that it would like to achieve. And we've spent some time here over the past week putting together some committees that are going to help us get to those goals. And I'm pretty excited about it.
Williams says the organization is still working on hiring a new executive director. Sue Aspelund announced her retirement in April, but Williams says she'll continue working with the organization until the position is filled. It's funded by a 1% tax on Bristol Bay drift fishermen. It's been a very dry summer in Kodiak, which has lowered water levels throughout the island, including the Monashka Reservoir, which supplies the residents of Kodiak City, and the dozen seafood processors on the waterfront. KMXT's Kayla DeRoche has more.
According to Rick Toman, the climate science and services manager for the Alaska region of the National Weather Service, it's one of the driest seasons in Kodiak history.
Kodiak, since June 1st, has received just over 10 inches of rain. That's just about half of normal for that time, and is the second lowest of record. The only reliable warm kind of time of year was back in 1941 when there was less than 8 inches of rain from June through September.
Doman says areas of south central Alaska were dry during parts of the summer, but have rebounded in September. In fact, he says this month is Anchorage's fourth wettest September, but Kodiak remains dry.
The main factor has been that the storm track has been from west to east during the last couple of months. That's not so unusual for part of the mid and late summer, but typically sometime late August or early September, we expect to see those storms start to move more southwest to northeast. That's happened somewhat, but those storms have been too far east to bring Kodiak much rain.
Kodiak City Public Works Director Mark Kozak says the lack of snowfall last winter has also contributed to the lowered reservoir. He says Kodiak has consumed a little over half its capacity, although that capacity is still more than it was in the early 2000s.
In 2003, we raised the Monashka Reservoir, and at that time, it pretty much doubled our capacity. So we're now slightly below the level of the old reservoir, which the city used from 1982 to 2003. And we're 3 feet below that old reservoir if it was full.
Kozak says both the community at large and its seafood processors rely on the Monashka Reservoir as a water source.
When the processors aren't using water, our daily consumption is about 2 million gallons a day. But when they're processing here prior to the middle of last week, as a community, we were averaging between 7.7 and 8.3 million gallons a day.
He says at a meeting Friday, the processors agreed to limit their water usage where they can.
They'll do all the careful monitoring of excess water usage and turn things off in that. And what we really want to be able to do is support the processing industry so that, you know, everybody's still working and the fishermen are working, the process workers. And so by conserving, we can allow them to continue to operate as long as we're able.
Kozak says the pollock season opens on October 1st and processors are in transition at this point, which also affects the water use. He says they'll have a better idea of what changes processors have been able to make by the end of the week when they reach full production. He says as for residents, there are a few things you can do, like taking shorter showers and turning the water off when you brush your teeth.
But also, you know, wait till your dishwasher is full. You know, when you're washing laundry, wait until you have full loads rather than partial loads. Those kind of things do make a big difference as individual households all make those slight changes.
However, Kodiak may have some more rainfall to look forward to. Here's Toman again.
The end of this week and over the weekend, it appears that the winds aloft will be turning around to be more southerly across the Gulf of Alaska, and the storm track will shift to west of Kodiak Island from the North Pacific and then into the Bering Sea. And that is exactly where you want storms to go if you'd like a lot of rain in Kodiak.
That could alleviate Kodiak's low water level problems. I'm Kayla DeRoche.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their family. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
Thousands of cans of Bristol Bay sockeye will be making their way to school lunches and other federal food programs around the country this winter as part of a USDA bailout. KDLG's Molly Dishner has more.
Icicle Seafoods in Peter Pan will fill warehouses around the country with half-pound cans of salmon as part of the USDA's effort to address the glut of sockeye on the market. Trident and Ocean Beauty also submitted bids to the United States Department of Agriculture, but didn't offer the low price necessary to get the contracts. The purchase comes as good news for the sockeye market, which had a surplus of fish after two summers of large harvests, says UAA economist Gunnar Knapp.
If the USDA comes and says, well, we will buy up some of that salmon, why, that takes some of that production out of the regular market channels that it would go to, and it can make a very significant difference in helping processors to get a higher price.
The USDA announced this summer that it would purchase up to $30 million worth of canned sockeye through its Emergency Food Assistance Program to address the glut of sockeye already on the market. Funding for the purchase came from import tariffs. The salmon will be delivered to warehouses around the country over the next 5 months, but it'll be a while before Alaska knows how many cans are coming back to the state. Here's Food Bank of Alaska Executive Director Mike Miller.
When the USDA buys a commodity from any state, it is fair shared out to all of the states based on, you know, the level of need, the level of poverty, and you know, other commodities that they have in their system. So it's very possible we will see some, but it's unlikely that we'll see the majority of it.
In Dillingham, I'm Molly Dishner.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by Commercial Fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
Scientists in a Bering Sea study examined the survival, distribution, and growth of young pollock to determine what might happen as the climate warms. They discovered that, according to NOAA scientist Janet Duffy Anderson, pollock is the loser in warm years, especially in back-to-back warm years. This finding has important policy ramifications for the commercial fishing industry, as pollock is the largest single-species fishery in the world. From the Ice Bridge Project, Elizabeth Arnold has more.
On the back deck of the Coast Guard icebreaker Healy, nets are being lowered with mesh as fine as nylon stockings. These plankton nets are used to collect walleye pollock eggs and larvae from the Bering Sea. Pollock is a $2 billion industry, the world's largest commercial fishery for a single species. So scientists wanted to know what happens to the survival, distribution, and growth of young pollock here in the Bering Sea as it warms. Janet Duffy Anderson is one of the NOAA scientists involved in the 7-year Bering Sea study.
So what we found is that under different climate regimes, where eggs and larvae end up is different. And that's important because it influences the type of food that they're exposed to. and the type of food that they're exposed to influences their body condition. And it's their body condition that determines whether or not they survive the first winter.
Examining historical sampling data off eggs and larvae, Duffy and others made an important discovery.
Pollock's the loser in warm years, particularly multiple warm years back to back. So we did this study under years of cold conditions. Initially, the hypothesis was pollock weren't going to do very well. It would be too cold for them. Larvae wouldn't grow fast. Things grow slower under cold conditions. Slow-growing fish wouldn't be as big and wouldn't be able to survive the winter. That was the original hypothesis.
That's not what they found.
What we found in cold was that in cold conditions, the prey-based community is actually quite lipid-rich. And while these fish grow slowly, they're packing on a lot of calories, and they're getting kind of fat, not just long. And so they're better able to survive the winter.
In warm years, they're not able to bulk up, and they die. So future changes in ocean temperatures will most certainly affect rates of growth, development, and the very survival of pollock larvae, in turn affecting the overall number of available pollock to the commercial fishing industry.
It gives us tools to be able to be proactive about management decisions. We've spent a lot of time being reactive.
The finding will allow policymakers and fishery managers to better predict overall numbers and set more sustainable harvest levels. For Soundings, I'm Elizabeth Arnold.
The Bering Sea Project is funded by the National Science Foundation and the North Pacific Research Board, with in-kind support from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. For a podcast of Soundings, go to arcticprofiles.com.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is supported in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
A Seattle-based company that sells frozen seafood recently opened a $40 million production plant and distribution center in Georgia. Trident Seafoods announced that its plant has opened in Carrollton, about 50 miles west of Atlanta. Trident was able to upgrade a former production plant on 81 acres for its Georgia operation, which includes 88,000 square feet of manufacturing space, 18,000 feet of office space, and a support area totaling 20,000 square feet. Georgia officials say the plant supports 175 full-time jobs and has the capacity to produce 50,000 tons of seafood a year for the U.S. market. Trident CEO Joe Bundrant says the Georgia site proved ideal for growing the company's business in the eastern U.S. Trident's customers include retail, club stores, restaurant chains, and food service distributors.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KDLG's Molly Dishner in Dillingham, KMXT's Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak, and the Ice Bridge Project's Elizabeth Arnold. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.